This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Joe Scott, International Conservation Director for Conservation Northwest, a nonprofit that protects and connects old-growth forests and other wild areas from the Washington coast to the BC Rockies, vital to a healthy future for us, our children, and wildlife. Joe Scott is here today to tell us about grizzly bear conservation and the Coast to Cascades Grizzly Bear Initiative. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks, Diane.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Conservation Northwest?
Sure. Your brief introduction pretty much sums up our organization. We work primarily to protect and connect habitat in the transboundary systems of Washington and British Columbia. We've done so for more than 20 years now, and our primary focus is generally on carnivores because they're wide-ranging species that need a vast variety of habitats across the area and are good surrogates for conservation in general. And we work in communities largely. We're on the ground. We're community folks who get in communities and work with people to find solutions to conservation issues and problems.
Would you now describe grizzly bears and tell us why they are important?
Well, besides being a very charismatic animal that has evolved in this system for thousands of years, they're actually an umbrella species, the conservation of which has enormous benefits for dozens of other species and natural values like water quality. And that's because of the seasonal habitat needs and large home ranges. Grizzly bears are actually surrogates for the protection of conservation values and ecosystem services across the landscape. So they're an integral part of the Pacific Northwest conservation fabric, if you will.
Could you say a few words about the bears themselves, their size, and their habits?
Well, grizzly bears are a little bit bigger than black bears. They can range from 250 pounds all the way up to 800 pounds, although those bigger bears are pretty rare in this area. They need very rich habitats to achieve such sizes, and you'll find sometimes big males in Alaska are that big, but in this area, grizzly bears are generally from the 250-pound to 500-pound range. They have fairly large home ranges. A female can have a home range of 200 to 500 square miles, and a male could have a range that's approximately twice that size. So they're pretty space-demanding, might not be the right word to use, but they have some pretty strong caloric needs over the course of the year, meaning they have to put on a lot of weight in the course of the year so that they can raise young and hibernate and den in the winter and survive without eating for several months. So their seasonal habitat and food needs are fairly high. In the fall, they could easily eat 20,000 calories a day in preparation for denning. And they generally reproduce very slowly. A female's lucky to replace herself in terms of the cubs she has over the course of her life. And a female may not reproduce until she's 4, 5, 6 years old. So one of the problems with bears and conservation of grizzly bears is that they're very reproductively challenged, I guess you'd say.
What is the best grizzly bear habitat?
Cascades is wonderful grizzly bear habitat. It's very rich in the foods, the plant-based foods that bears need. Like I say, grizzly bears are opportunistic omnivores. They eat a wide variety of foods, both plant-based and animal-based, and fish, of course. People who pay attention to bears know that in lots of areas of the world, particularly Alaska, grizzly bears depend on salmon in large part for their calories. And some areas they don't have salmon, but they have other foods like huckleberries and whitebark pine nuts. They eat various root based foods like cow parsnips and things like that. They eat a lot of vegetative foods like sedges and things of that nature. They depend a lot on glacial lilies. So in some areas in the Rockies, you'll see the grizzly bears follow the snow line up avalanche chutes to feed on the glacial lilies that grow in those avalanche chutes.
Historically, what has been the range of grizzly bears in North America?
In the early 19th century, grizzly bears ranged from central Mexican highlands to Alaska and east as far as the Mississippi River. By the 1930s, they were mostly gone from everywhere in the continental U.S. except for isolated pockets in Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, and Washington, with maybe a sprinkling of animals in remote areas of other states. So we've essentially pushed them out of their habitats in most of those areas, either by development of their habitats or persecution or conflict or simple lack of understanding and bad management.
Could you give us a sense of the overall change in the number of grizzly bears?
Well, there was a nadir of bear populations in the lower 48 states in the late 1960s when they declined to really small numbers in these isolated pockets of habitat. Virtually all that we had left here was a handful of bears in Yellowstone and Glacier National Park complexes, and then in northern Washington and maybe in Idaho. It's a mixed bag between the U.S. and British Columbia. And in the intervening years, so from the late 60s to now, grizzly bears have made a fairly dramatic comeback in Yellowstone and Glacier Parks, largely because of the Endangered Species Act and the quality of those habitats. So they're doing well in some areas in BC as well, but they continue to decline in places like Alberta because of habitat destruction, and of course are not recovering in what we call Cascadia, so western Washington and southwest BC. Challenges in BC include poaching and human conflict and ongoing habitat fragmentation. In our area of the U.S., it's reluctance by the federal government to initiate a public process that would guide an actual recovery plan. So, like I say, it's a mixed bag. They're doing well in some areas where they're protected and where they had some space to grow, and the numbers didn't get as low as they are here. But in other areas, they're really struggling.
Would you go into more detail about the key threats to grizzlies at present?
Well, there's a couple levels, Diane, and depending on which country we're talking about, too, there's different threats. But in the U.S., as I've said, we have a fairly secure habitat. The North Cascades is a 10,000 square mile grizzly bear recovery zone that's very well secured, and the federal agencies have done a good job protecting that habitat. On the BC side, situation is a little bit different. The main threats to bears on that side of the border are habitat fragmentation, and the cumulative effects or the combined effects of human development and grizzly bear habitat are the main problem on the BC side, on the British Columbia side. So that includes an excessive open backcountry roads network and then other infrastructure associated with different economic sectors like energy development, mining, forestry, and recreation. And then some of those also overlap with ranching and livestock grazing and farming as well. So the cumulative effects of all of those activities harm bears in three main ways, and ways that often overlap with each other. And those include conflicts between humans and bears, the increase in frequency often resulting in grizzly bear deaths, as well because of the extensive roads network, grizzly bear poaching is made easier, of course, by more improved backcountry roads. The bigger picture, bear populations become isolated from each other because all of this infrastructure, the roads, utility corridors, and all of those things tend to accumulate in valley bottoms, especially major valley bottoms, which makes it difficult for bears to move through those areas unharmed. It's a particular problem for females with cubs. And then ultimately, the habitat itself, the productivity of the habitat is lost or degraded by that development and human activities, which again either prevent or deter bears from moving through those landscapes and using those critical habitats to get the foods and the things that they need to actually get through the year. And again, those impacts are particularly problematic for females with cubs, very reluctant to use human-influenced habitats. So in the bigger picture, all of the threatened Coastal Cascades, what we're calling Coastal Cascades grizzly bear populations, and healthier neighbors to the north and west need to be stitched together so that they intermingle and can actually move with the seasons to find the foods they need to survive and raise young and find mates. And then when you overlay uncertainties around food sources with climate change, those effects can be compounded in the future. So there's a lot of challenges for bears, but all of those challenges can probably be overcome or at least mitigate it to some extent if we protect extensive enough habitat so that the bears actually have enough space and connected habitats to be able to adapt and access food sources when they need them. So some of the localized or regional threats include erosion of linkage habitats where threatened grizzly bear populations can connect to stronger or more robust populations, which leads to further genetic and demographic isolation for bears. Poaching and human conflict-related grizzly bear deaths is another problem. And poorly protected critical core habitats, of course, is problematic for these animals. And then you have declines in critical food sources like salmon and whitebark pine seeds, and a high degree of motorized access into grizzly bear habitats, which, of course, leads to increased conflict and more opportunities for poaching.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Joe Scott, International Conservation Director for Conservation Northwest. Our topic is grizzly bear conservation and the Costa Cascades Grizzly Bear Initiative. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. What are the current policies in regard to hunting grizzlies, both in the U.S. and Canada?
Well, it's a tale of two countries, essentially. Currently in the lower 48 states, grizzly bear hunting is not allowed because grizzly bears are still protected under the Endangered Species Act. That would likely change if grizzlies in the Rockies lose their protections under the Endangered Species Act. On the other hand, grizzly bear hunting is allowed in many areas in B.C. and is somewhat controversial. But it is not allowed in B.C. and British Columbia where bears are threatened, like those populations immediately north of here in southwest B.C. The common denominator of Washington and B.C., at least, is that there are no current recovery plans, and that's the problem. And I mean that for Washington State and British Columbia. Where recovery plans have been implemented in Yellowstone, they've been very successful, as I've said, and have resulted in dramatic grizzly bear number increases. But despite the desperate situation of our Cascades bears, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has not chosen to initiate recovery process. In B.C., there are a couple more steps to recover bears, but basically those amount to identifying, protecting, and connecting enough high-quality habitats so bears can do what bears do and protecting the individual bears, particularly females, from human conflict and poaching. But basically, it's sort of a mixed bag in terms of hunting. Where bear populations are more robust, hunting is allowed, but in the lower 48, hunting is not allowed. So it's not an issue here, at least not yet.
Let's talk now about the Costa Cascades Grizzly Bear Initiative and why it was started.
Like I said, grizzly bears continue to decline in this part of North America. So in other words, the West Coast range continues to shrink further north. And that range contraction, if you will, represents a vast area of several thousand square kilometers in northwest Washington and southwest BC that potentially would no longer have grizzly bears, continuing a trend that began, as I've said, in the early 1800s. And grizzly bears are an umbrella species, the conservation of which has enormous benefits for dozens of other species and natural values. Again, I'm repeating myself, but I think it bears repeating. And that's because their seasonal habitat needs and large home ranges, they require a good amount of habitat to be able to thrive. So Conservation Northwest and other groups who have been paying attention to bear conservation in this part of the world, we more or less realized that unless we acted soon, cooperatively, binationally, to reverse that trend, grizzly bears would cease to exist in the Cascades in areas immediately north and southern BC coast mountains and on this side of those mountains in the interior. So that's a problem if we're to recover bears in the Cascades, because we need interconnected grizzly bear populations throughout the region for those animals to survive here in the longer term.
What are the specific steps that the initiative proposes?
The goal, first of all, is to reverse the decline in the regions, the southwest BC and Washington, and restore bears to self-sustaining numbers where suitable habitats still exist, or we can restore it. And the strategy is to eliminate or reduce situations where people and grizzly bears may come into conflict around natural resource sector practices in the backcountry, and work with communities to protect and connect the grizzly bear habitat that bears need to find food and mates and to raise young. So all those seasonal habitats need to be more well-secured and connected across the landscape. On the U.S. side, the priority is a recovery planning process that is long overdue and almost certainly includes bear transplants. So there are short and longer-term objectives and actions that we intend to pursue and rescue desperately small grizzly populations and ultimately build up their numbers and connect their habitats.
In addition to Conservation Northwest, who is involved in the Grizzly Bear Initiative?
Well, we have a number of groups, predominantly in BC, from the smaller community groups like the Whistler and Lillooet Naturalists, all the way up to the Canadian Parks and Wilderness Society-sized groups, national Canadian groups. Sierra Club BC is involved. But we also have the collaboration of one of the most powerful and well-connected First Nations in southwest BC, the Stadlium First Nation. And the Stadlium traditional territories overlap a large part of the Coastal Cascades Grizzly Project area. And what's significant about that First Nation community is that their culture is very closely tied to the grizzly bear and, in fact, underpins their cultural and subsistence needs. So we have a fairly strong and broad coalition internationally in support of the Coastal Cascades and grizzly bear conservation in general in this region.
What has the Grizzly Bear Initiative accomplished so far?
Well, we just launched IAN in September, so we've been in large part trying to get the word out about the situation of bears in the region and what we are trying to accomplish. In large part, just building the support of our collaborative groups in terms of getting them to come up to speed. And we've done a number of presentations throughout the area to raise awareness, and we've gotten some good quality media on the launch. We've launched a reward fund to help mitigate the poaching problem in Southwest BC, and so that includes working with our collaborators like the Pemberton Wildlife Association, which is a hunting-based group, to get a substantial reward fund for information leading to the persecution of poachers of grizzly bears in some of these areas where they're not supposed to be hunted. But basically, we're in the nascent stages, so we can't claim a huge victory on any of these fronts at the moment. We're just getting with the program.
Would you go into a bit more detail about what's known about the presence of grizzlies in the North Cascades of Washington State?
What we know is that they're desperately endangered in Washington. There's likely fewer than half dozen animals, and that they need help. What we don't know is whether there are even any females in the Cascades. Scientists have documented grizzlies on only a handful of occasions in the past 10 years through video and photos, all but one of which are on the BC side of the border. So we know we have grizzly bears here in the system. We don't know exactly how many. We know there are very, very few of them, and we have no evidence of a reproducing population in the Cascades on either side of the border, which is troubling. But they're here. They're just in very, very low densities and numbers.
How does the status of grizzlies compare with black bears in the North Cascades of Washington State?
Well, it's probably, according to Department of Fish and Wildlife, there are approximately 25,000 black bears in Washington State. So the number of grizzly bears, of course, pales by comparison to the number of black bears, which are doing quite well here. As I said, grizzly bears are highly endangered in the Cascades. There's a handful of grizzly bears further east in the Selkirks Mountains of northeast Washington. Maybe 40 bears total in the transboundary Selkirks in northeast Washington and southeast BC. But again, in the Cascades, we have only a handful, and they need help.
And why is there such a difference between black and grizzly bears in this area?
Well, black bears are fairly adaptable to human presence. They have much different habitat needs. They do fairly well around human communities. Their habits and habitat needs are much different. They're low-profile animals, shall we say. Their home ranges are smaller. Like I say, they adjust well to human presence. Grizzly bears are a different animal. They have larger home range needs. They're a bigger animal. They need more undisturbed wild areas to do well. They need large roadless tracks to find foods and raise young and find mates. Black bears seem to manage pretty well in landscapes that human beings mostly inhabit. So it's a very different life history between those two species.
To what extent do black bears and grizzlies compete with each other if they're in the same area?
That's a good question. It depends on the number of grizzly bears in large part, but basically grizzly bears more or less rule the roost. Black bears, if you will, defer to their larger neighbors in terms of accessing foods and habitats, those kinds of things. It's unknown in small grizzly bear populations how much competition there is between larger black bears and grizzly bears, for example. But basically grizzly bears and black bears have coexisted in North America for thousands of years, and they do that by filling fairly different habitat niches. Grizzly bears in the summer are largely higher up in the ecosystems, feeding on huckleberries, those kinds of things. Black bears are predominantly a forest animal. Grizzly bears are more of an open terrain, higher elevation animal, except in the springtime when they're down low with green vegetation, when there's still snow up high. So they basically don't compete for a large part of the year because of the different habitat needs and the habitat niches they fill.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Joe Scott, International Conservation Director for Conservation Northwest. Our topic is grizzly bear conservation and the Costa Cascades Grizzly Bear Initiative. You mentioned earlier that it would probably be necessary to bring in grizzlies to help their recovery in the Washington Cascades. Would you say more about what progress is being made in trying to do that and what kind of response you're finding from people?
Well, in the past, surveys have shown that residents of the areas and the towns and communities around the Cascades are very supportive of grizzly bear recovery. They recognize the fact that grizzly bears were here before European settlers. They recognize the fact that they're an integral part of the fabric of the Northwest wildlands and ecosystems, if you will. And they're quite supportive of grizzly bear recovery. What needs to happen is that there's a draft recovery plan that has existed for the area since 1997. And that recovery plan needs to be implemented by a public process under the National Environmental Policy Act, the NEPA. And up till now, that process has not been initiated by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So we're waiting for them to initiate the public process that will finally implement a recovery plan that will lead ostensibly or hopefully to the recovery of bears in the Cascades. Currently, we understand funding is in place to initiate that recovery process, but for whatever reason, it's not being done. So it's up to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to get that going. And to date, that hasn't happened, despite the fact that we're about to lose the bears in the Cascades forever. And if we lose them, it's unlikely we'll get them back.
What do you think it would take to have the implementation move forward? What's standing in the way?
That's a good question, Diane. I don't know. We've been trying to help with this process as best we can with outreach, with building support among our members and doing outreach to communities in the area. For whatever reason, that process has not moved forward. And this process, this plan, this recovery imperative has more or less been languishing for almost 20 years now. And despite the support from communities for recovery, we still haven't seen any movement on the part of the federal government to recover bears here. A lot of the things that need to be done prior to bear recovery have been done to their credit. So the policies and management plans that we need across the landscape for the habitat are in place. They're strong. They go very far to protect the habitat here. We have 10,000 square miles of some of the best grizzly bear habitat and well-managed grizzly bear habitat in the lower 48 states. But the missing piece in all of this is a NEPA process that would lead to implementation that probably would lead to augmenting this population. So transplants of bears into the Cascades that would more or less provide a booster shot for bear recovery in the area. And that's the part that is not getting done. And I can't provide an answer as to why that's not getting done. I don't know.
What is the best way to respond if you meet a grizzly or black bear in the wild?
$64,000 question. Well, when you're recreating, let's take, for example, hiking. If you're recreating in known grizzly bear habitat, you should always have bear spray and make sure it's accessible. The best strategy, of course, is to avoid interactions at close range by keeping alert to signs of bear presence and making noise when you're in bear country to alert any bears that are in your area that you're around. But basically, it's awareness of your area, awareness of where you are, and the fact that you may come face-to-face with a bear. If you do come face-to-face with a grizzly bear, it's like anything else. You need to remain calm, talk slowly but firmly, and try to determine if there's a potential defensive or predatory encounter on the part of that bear. But basically, it's common sense. If you suddenly surprise a bear, and the idea, again, is not to surprise a bear, and the best way to not do that is to make noise. And the human voice is probably the best way to do that. You don't have to scream and shout and everything while you're on the trail, but talking in a fairly loud voice is always good. That alerts a bear that you're in the area. You know, grizzly bears don't really want to be around people, so they'll avoid you if they know you're there. But if you do surprise a bear, again, remain calm and most of all, do not run. Speak in a low monotone voice so the bear can identify you as human. Generally try to assess the situation and try to understand whether there's a potential for a predatory or a defensive attack. But those are rare, and they very rarely occur, and you're more likely to be struck by lightning than be attacked by a grizzly bear.
What if a bear charges?
If a bear charges and you know it's a female with cubs, she's trying to eliminate a threat to her cubs. So basically you want to assure her that you're not a threat to those cubs, and so you want to get on your stomach, leave your backpack on if you have one, brace yourself with your elbows and feet and make sure she can't roll you over, and basically be quiet until she's satisfied that she's neutralized you as a threat. She's not trying to kill you. She's trying to make sure you're not going to harm her cubs. A predatory attack is quite different, and if you recognize a predatory attack as such, you do want to fight back. You want to throw rocks. You want to throw sticks. You want to appear big. And you basically want to yell and shout and make sure that bear knows that you are not going to provide food for it. But that's a predatory attack, and those are extremely rare. So you want to distinguish between those two and make sure you behave appropriately in those situations. But again, both those situations are rare, and it's much easier to avoid a situation where you face a confrontation than to deal with one after the fact.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think that we're about to lose grizzly bears in this part of the world, and that would indeed be tragic. The only way we're going to recover bears in this part of the world is if the communities and people here recognize what we will have lost if we lose them, and that they recognize the value of grizzly bears not only as a species themselves, but for what they represent on the landscape, and that we need them to become involved in the advocacy for these bears if we're to recover them and impress upon the federal government that we want them recovered in this area. So basically, it's involvement. Learn all you can about the issue, learn all you can about the animal, and weigh in when the time comes in terms of recovery. Because the government needs to understand that the people want this animal to remain on our landscape for future generations. If they don't understand that, then they won't take action to recover them. It's as simple as that.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Joe.
You're welcome, Diane. Thank you.
You were just listening to Joe Scott, International Conservation Director for Conservation Northwest. For more information, check on the web at conservationnw.org and also coasttocascades.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.